Hello, folks. This is Will Aitchison. I'm happy to be hosting another of our series of podcast interviews. This time, I'm going to be interviewing a management side labor lawyer from Southern California, Barbara Raylenu. Barbara, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you so much, Will. Really a great opportunity, and I appreciate you giving us the opportunity to speak with you regarding this case.
Now, we're going to talk about the case in just a moment. It's a case involving a California Supreme Court decision on the Firefighters Bill of Rights in California. First case of its kind ever to come down under the California Bill of Rights. But before we get there, Barbara, tell us a little bit about your firm and your practice and this client that gave rise to this case.
Sure. So I've been practicing for about 15 years now. I did graduate from UC Davis in 1999, and I've been with Woodruff, Spradlin, and Smart since 2001. I've been with their labor and employment department since that time. I worked under Terry Andrus, who used to be county counsel over here at the County of Orange, and he moved over to the firm after the Orange County bankruptcy, so I was mentored by one of the best in the business. And I've always really enjoyed labor and employment. That was something that I knew I wanted to do right out of law school.
Barbara, this is something that continues to fascinate me. When I talk to labor lawyers, whether they're on labor side or management side, I find a very high level of love for their practice, for their work, no matter which side they're on. And if you like scratch a criminal defense lawyer or an antitrust lawyer or a tax lawyer, you're not going to find the same thing. What is it about this business?
For me, I love making or assisting people in getting along with each other in the workplace, because one of the main things is, look, we all serve a very important function. All these employees that we assist in some regard, they all serve an important function within their organization. And to me, I see it as a way to help everybody kind of get along, either improve efficiency. And even though some people may look to me as, you're a management attorney who, you know, assists with terminating employees, as I see it, I think I help the efficiency of the organization at times. Sometimes managing an employee that's just a problem can be so time consuming and can really take away from the core function of that organization. So I really find that it helps, and I like helping on the front end to figure out ways to assist that employee in becoming a better employee. So it's not that, you know, we go immediately to termination. I like the psychology of all of it. I like that you can implement so many of the things that we've all learned in law school all in one area of practice, from contract and evidence and, you know, constitutional law. So I find it all really fascinating, and I really enjoy being able to help my clients pretty much on a daily basis work through some of these issues and become hopefully better organizations for it.
And it's just fascinating to me, because what you said could have been said by someone like me who's normally on labor side of the table.
Right.
I think we all have this passion for the work. Okay, let's talk about this case. First of all, the California Firefighter Procedural Bill of Rights. When did that come into being, and what was the reason for it?
So it was enacted in 2007, much later than its counterpart, the Public Safety Officers Procedural Bill of Rights, which has been around since 1977. And I believe that part, you know, obviously it's got in effect the same purpose as the Public Safety Procedural Bill of Rights, although I always struggled with the rationale behind it, and I'll explain a little bit why. Under Public Safety Bill of Rights, peace officers, as you know, they have they're much more subject to citizen complaints, and agencies are actually required to file or to conduct investigations into those, and then personnel files of peace officers are in turn often subject to discovery requests in criminal matters. So there's a lot more need, in my opinion, in that context for the protections that the Public Safety Officers Procedural Bill of Rights affords. So when the Firefighters Bill of Rights was enacted in 2007, I did kind of scratch my head a little bit, because I didn't feel that the same protections were really necessary. And number one, number two, I also found it odd because most of the protections in that act were already being afforded to firefighters through other constitutional provisions as well as, case law specific to California, this Skelly versus Personnel Board in terms of due process rights and so on. So a lot of these things were not necessarily new. So I was a little unclear as to the reasons why the firefighters believed they were also entitled to these same protections that peace officers were receiving. But when you look at the legislative intent, it's similar to that of the Public Safety Procedural Bill of Rights, and I believe the intent was similar to that. It was to ensure that there were good employer-employee relations, that those relations were more consistently administered throughout the state and not just administered by some agencies and not others. And I think the fact that firefighters frequently work with other agencies throughout California really impacted that. And it's really intended to ensure that all of their due process rights are provided during every step of every potential personnel action from the moment that, like we're going to talk a little bit later about from the moment that adverse comments are entered into any file to the moment to the point where, they're being disciplined, they're being investigated, they're being disciplined, and then they have a right to appeal that decision. So it's ensuring that all of their due process and all of their procedural rights are protected during this disciplinary process.
Now, looking at the case that eventually made it to the Supreme Court here, it involves the Orange County Fire Authority. What is this just a fire department for unincorporated Orange County, California, or is it more than that?
No, it's actually much more than that. It's one of the largest fire departments in California, and it's certainly the largest within Orange County. It used to be a fire department of the county, and there were several cities that participated in that fire department that the county administered for quite a long period of time, and of course the unincorporated parts of the county as well. And I had already mentioned a little bit the bankruptcy of 95. There were efforts in 95 for that fire department to create a special district and to separate from the county. The bankruptcy kind of stalled things a little bit, but eventually what they realized they could do is form a joint powers authority where each of the individual cities within Orange County had the ability to give their fire protection obligations to this joint power authority. And so that's how the fire authority was formed in 1995, 1996 time period, and created a separate entity that's really now comprised of, gosh, how many? Now there's 25 board members. I can't recall exactly how many cities, but so there's two supervisors from the county board as well as I believe 23 cities within Orange County.
And some of them are fairly big cities in Orange County, the largest cities in Orange County, right? I think.
Correct. Irvine is obviously one of the bigger ones. And obviously San Juan Capistrano. There are several I'm sorry, there's several cities that have very large populations that are part of this organization.
Now, this case involves a firefighter by the name of Steve Poole and a fire captain by the name of Brett Culp. What was going on that gave rise to a case that made it all the way to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, so obviously, some of the information I can't provide to you since it's not all public record, some of the history, and there are some privacy concerns there.
Oh yeah,
But
I just want the public stuff.
sure, of course. So, what's reflected in the record, and what's reflected in the record are all of the notes that Captain Brett Culp kept of regarding Steve Poole. Steve Poole was a long-term employee of the fire authority, and Brett Culp was a fairly new captain when he was assigned to the station that Steve Poole was working at. As a new fire captain, I think he was very diligent in his obligations as a captain and really wanted to make sure that his station was running very well and did hold all of his employees to a fairly high standard. Captain Culp realized there were some performance deficiencies with respect to Mr. Poole. and he began noting those performance deficiencies. And it should be noted that really Captain Culp did a good job of talking to Steve Poole about all of these issues. It wasn't that he kept a secret file. That should not be at all the impression given by this case. Culp met frequently with Poole, discussed the issues, but then he would go back and notate that, you know, the issue arose and that he spoke to Poole about them. And in fact, Captain Culp brought this log that he maintained to the meetings that he had with Poole to discuss the performance issues, and most of them related to his behavior in the station. As you can see, I don't know if you have access to the notes themselves, but those are within the public record at the trial court level. So in essence, there was an ongoing issue. Eventually, Captain Culp determined, you know, this individual needs to be placed on a performance improvement plan. He gave a relatively negative performance evaluation that was premised in large part on these notes that he had kept. And when he provided those documents to Poole, what happened was is the union realized, wow, this is a very thorough evaluation. This is a very thorough performance improvement plan, listing some very specific examples. We just don't believe that Captain Culp was able to recall all of these incidents on his own. We think there's something more going on. And that's
And of
when,
course, they were right.
well, they were right. They went down to the station, knocked at the door, were greeted by Captain Culp, who, and then the union specifically asked right away, hey, give us every file you've kept on Steve Poole. Captain Culp, not realizing or not even thinking that there was any concern with that, he went and retrieved the notes that he'd been keeping and turned them over to the union. The union then proceeded to say, hey, thank you for showing us these, but you've never showed them to Mr. Poole, and he had a right to look at these. And because you use these notes to prepare a performance evaluation and a performance improvement plan, you're going to have to retract all of those things because they were premised on documents that were never shown to our member, Firefighter Poole.
Now let's pause right there. What does the Firefighter Bill of Rights say about whether or what types of records, personnel records, have to be shown to an employee?
So what types of personnel records? There's three sections that are relevant here, and the three sections are within the California Government Code, and they're sections 3255. That was the one that was the of primary concern to the Supreme Court. There's also section 3256 and 3256.5. The first section refers to the adverse comments, if there are any adverse comments entered into a personnel file, and here's the key language, or a file used for personnel purposes by the employer, the employee should be given a right to see the note, to see the adverse comment, and to sign it before it's entered into that file. Now, that first provision does not define what a personnel file is. It just references, you know, a file used for personnel purposes. One of the arguments we made before the Supreme Court was that under 3256.5, which discusses more the right to inspect personnel files, that provision is really where the definition of what a personnel file is where it's defined. And that provision under subdivision A refers to personnel files that are used or have been used to determine that firefighter's qualifications for employment, promotion, additional compensation, or termination or other disciplinary action. So the Supreme Court read each of those three sections relating to personnel files in within the same context and determined that personnel file used or a file used for personnel purposes would have to meet that definition that's really set forth in 3256.5.
So now, taking it out of the neat language in the statute and putting it into the firehouse, what does the Supreme Court's decision mean about the notes kept by a captain that are only used by him for the purposes of preparing a performance evaluation or a work plan?
And I think you really hit the nail on the head in your question right there is, and that was really the main argument that we made to the Supreme Court, was the fact that the notes were only used by Captain Culp to prepare an evaluation. They were not, the notes were never shared with anybody, nor were they made accessible to anybody. And those are really the two key things in this matter, is once those notes are shown to someone else that would qualify, as the term is used in 3255, as the employer, meaning someone who has the ability to affect the employment status in one of the ways that are articulated in the subsequent section,
So, like transfer
then,
or discipline or something like that.
right, exactly. So some employment decision that would affect employment status, when it's shown to somebody who has that ability, that's really when the notes must then comply with the requirement under Section 3255, which is show them to the firefighter. And the reason for that, it's fairly logical. The captain's going to have whatever thoughts he's going to have on the firefighter. He's experiencing the issues firsthand with this individual. He's just keeping notes. Some captains may have a tremendous memory and may not have the need to maintain notes. And when it comes to writing an evaluation, they're able to recite several incidents that occurred throughout the year that were both good and bad. Cope simply just kept, as the trial court mentioned, post-it notes, just little post-it and little reminders when it came time to the evaluation to assist him with that process. But he didn't share those notes, and the notes had no finality in terms of being able to affect Firefighter Poole's ultimate employment status. Because number one, Culp couldn't affect that employment status on his own, and they weren't shown to anybody who could have that effect on Poole's employment status.
I assume, though, the union is arguing, why should there have to be a showing of the notes to someone who could affect a personnel status? Because after all, we wouldn't have the performance evaluation that we got without the notes, and the performance evaluation could well be taken into account in affecting the firefighters' terms and conditions of employment in the future.
Absolutely. And that's really the key part as well, is you're right. The performance evaluation is what can affect performance or employment status of the firefighter. And that in turn is placed in the personnel file. And that is something that he clearly did have a right to review, did have a right to respond to, did have a right to request that certain portions be removed. That's the document to which all of these rights under Firefighters' Bill of Rights attach. And he was provided with all of those rights. And so the issue, and this is in trying to distinguish what occurred here, we reviewed every single case interpreting these same provisions under Public Safety Officers' Procedural Bill of Rights. And the one common thread, which is what the Supreme Court also agreed with, is that provision that says it's any file used for any personal purposes by his or her employer. That key provision, by his or her employer, is very important, because in each of those cases under the parallel Peace Officers' Bill of Rights, the key factor was that whether the note was placed in a personnel file or some other file that was called something else, that didn't matter. What did matter was, is this going to be placed somewhere where another person within the organization that could affect the firefighter's employment status is going to pick it up, read this note, and now he's being influenced by something to which he wasn't really a party. He wasn't involved with the situation. The firefighter doesn't have a response in there because he may not even know that the document exists. And now we've formed an impression on somebody that would qualify as the employer in the sense that they can affect employment status. And the firefighter now hasn't had a chance to really even respond to that. And that's really what's protected here. It's not that the firefighter should have a right to respond to his direct supervisor who's experienced the very issue that is being written down, because they're already directly involved in that issue. And whatever impression the captain's going to have regarding that firefighter, it's going to be in his mind regardless of whether, it's written down or not. The issue is protecting firefighters from the ability to from one supervisor's ability to influence his employment status with respect to others within the organization without giving the firefighter the right to provide a response.
Now, Let me ask you a question that kind of leaped out at me when I read the opinion. But understand that I come from a little bit different environment than California. In California, you do collective bargaining. You don't even call it collective bargaining. You call it meet and confer. You do it under a state statute. I think it's called the Meyer-Milius-Brown Act.
That's correct.
And there hasn't been a rich tradition in the development of California public safety employee labor law, because at least until fairly recently, firefighters and police officers weren't covered by the state labor board, and you'd have to litigate those sorts of cases in court. And even today, I think police officers are still not subject to the state labor board. Is that right? But firefighters are.
No, not all, not local agency firefighters. They are not subject to the state
They
labor
are not
board.
subject to it.
No, only the
So I.
California fire departments, the state fire departments.
Okay. So I'm sitting up here north of you in Oregon, where it's not raining, I should say. And I'm thinking, if I'm representing this union and I want to see these records, I'm not sure I slug it out under the language in the Bill of Rights. I'm thinking maybe that isn't a personnel file or a file, or the notes are not a personnel file or a file used for personnel purposes. I'm thinking instead what I do is make a request for bargaining information. Because, as we know, the obligation to collectively bargain carries with it the obligation to exchange information that is relevant to the bargaining process. And theoretically, work improvement plans and the like would be a topic that is relevant to the bargaining process. And I didn't see any sign that that had been done in your case. Did that happen?
That didn't happen, but I'm not sure if you consulted with the local 3631 in this case, but I have
Nope,
noticed
I
that
didn't. I didn't consult with them.
somehow, somewhere they did get that idea, and that is the tactic that they have now taken whenever there's an issue. They are requesting documents under the obligation to provide documents as part of the bargaining process. So
Okay.
that they have changed that. They've either been educated or a light bulb went off at some point. But that is something they are now doing, but which they did not do in this
Well, Barbara, I'd love to take credit for that, but I actually can't.
case.
That's completely independent. Well, Barbara, thank you so much for participating in this interview. I know I've taken a lot of your time, and congratulations on the victory before the California Supreme Court. And I hope we stay in touch with you as time goes by.
That would be great. Thank you so much, Will. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Okay, have a good afternoon. And folks, thanks for listening to this special interview podcast. Have a good day.